Coach, you get a win late last night in Atlanta. I know it's a long night of travel back for you, so we appreciate you coming on with us today. But happy with the win last night?
Always good to win. Always good to win.
Feel like you beat a team last night. I know that Bill Parcells has said your record is what it says it is, but a 1-3 team that sure looked like they had a lot of offensive weaponry for them.
Well, yeah, no question. We knew that going in. They have as good a group of skill players, I think, as probably as anybody in the league does. Good quarterback, good tight end, good receivers, good backs. They've got a lot of talented players at the skill positions, no question about it.
Good test for your guys who are covering them, your secondary especially, and to try to deal with especially, you know, Jones and White and Tony Gonzalez, who I know we'll talk more about today.
Yeah,
is
sure
that a test you wanted to see?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I wasn't looking to see it, but you know, look, every team's got good players. We see them every week, so it was a big challenge for us. I thought our guys really, you know, prepared hard and competed well. And they made some plays. We made some plays. Fortunately, we made a couple more than they did. But I thought our defensive players competed well against that offensive group.
I want to ask you about that preparation for a team like this. I mean, the last time you played Atlanta, you only play them every 4 years. The last time you played them, they had a different offensive coordinator, had a different defensive coordinator. Ryan was still there at quarterback, and Mike Smith, obviously, the head coach. Your record against the NFC is very good, and theoretically, those would be tougher games to prepare for because you don't see them that often. Can you tell us the process of preparing for a team like that that you don't see versus a team that's in your conference?
Well, I think it all starts in the off season. You take a look at the off season and go back and look at the team and get familiar with them from the previous season, the 2012 season in this case. Sometimes if there's a new coaching staff or a new coordinator, that information might be limited. You just have to go with what they did somewhere else and try to piece it together. But in a case like Atlanta, where they've had their coordinators were all the same from last year and they had a great year, you know, there's an expectation that they would do things, at least some things, similar to what they did them last year. And that'll kind of change everything when they go out and win 13 games and go to the NFC Championship game. So that gave us something to work with. And then as we saw their films evolve this year and their patterns, then we kind of combine that with last year and see what's different, what's the same. You know, how did other teams play them successfully last year? How didn't they play them well? And try to, you know, make sure that we emphasize the things in practice that are important for us, because you can't really get it all. You get as much as you can, but there's things that you got to really emphasize and make sure that you get those. And I think that's an important thing for us with a team that's kind of new, is the practice reps or the quality reps. They're things that, you know, we really feel like we're going to have to do in the game, so you want to make sure that we practice them.
Do you get the sense that veteran coordinators change all that much? I mean, Mike Nolan is a defensive coordinator, but he's been around as a coordinator. He's been around as a head coach. No matter where they go, are they essentially doing what they do? Or have you found in the past that, okay, this coordinator was here, he had a completely different style because he was working for a different head coach?
Yeah, I'd say each one's is unique in its own way. It's hard to say exactly what that is. It depends on the situation. But, you know, you have the background of the coordinators, and then you also have the history of them against you. So in this case, it would have been when we played Mike when he was at Miami. So how did he play us there? Granted, it's different, you know, people and all, but at least we could look and see what he probably feels good about what he did, and maybe some things that he feels like this, you know, didn't work as well against us, and would he want to do that again? We have to prepare for it, but, you know, maybe it's not as likely that we would see something that wasn't as successful. Whereas if there was something that you know, he's looking at it and saying, you know, this looked pretty good when I was at Miami, that was probably a good chance that we could see it again. We'd better be prepared for it.
There are reports out this morning that Vince Wilfork is going to miss the rest of the year. Can you confirm those reports yet?
It doesn't look too good for Vince. I think he's got a pretty serious injury, and it's probably unlikely that he'll be able to play again this year.
The guy, first of all, I mean, talk more about how you replace a guy like Vince and even some of the stuff you guys did last night. But, I mean, when you hear news like that, what's your reaction?
Well, very disappointed for Vince. He's, you know, worked hard, worked very hard to prepare for the season. He's a true professional. Gave us great leadership on and off the field. Great example for the younger players, as well as the veteran players. He's got a real commitment to the team and to winning. So it's unfortunate. It's you hate to see it.
Yeah. It will help if I turn the microphone on, huh? You see something like that happen during the season, and it's rosters are set. Not many guys out there the caliber of Vince Wilfork. Do you look internally and say, we just got to replace Vince with what we have here? Or are you actively looking out there for free agents or trades to try to replace what Vince brought to the table?
Well, that's something that we go through every week. We look at every single position of who would be the next person at that spot and just list all the positions, defensive end, defensive tackle, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, go right down the line. And some of those players are on a roster in our system. Some of those players maybe have been with us but were released and aren't with a team now. And maybe there are other players that were with another team that we've worked out, that we've looked at, that we think that might be the next person. So it would all depend on who the player was that we were trying to replace, what our options were, and who was available and so forth. So it's each case is a little bit different.
My impression of Vince is that one of the things that makes him a great player is his versatility, his ability to do a lot of things very well from his position. If you're trying to replace that productivity, can you do that with one guy? Do you do it with two players who might have two skills specifically to each of them that he might be able to combine into one player?
Yeah. Well, again, it depends on what the options are. I mean, clearly there are no Vince Wilforks just standing around out there on the corner waiting to sign with the Patriots or some other NFL team. I mean, he's a special player, one of the very best at his position. So there's no way that you would replace him with one guy. It's totally unrealistic. But, we'll try to do what we can to make our team as competitive as possible with the 46 guys that we put out there against Cincinnati this Sunday, whoever they are, whatever positions they are, however we configure it, that's what we'll try to do. So we'll take a look at our options and try to do what we feel like is best for the team.
Bill, there are other reports out there that were floating around this weekend that the Patriots are at odds with Rob Gronkowski on his rehab and when he's supposed to return. Can you describe the relationship between the Patriots and Rob Gronkowski?
Good. I don't have anything to add to anything that I've said about Rob. I've addressed it at almost every news conference that I've had, and there's nothing new to report.
Are you comfortable that you guys are on the same page in terms of how his rehab is going and when he's going to return?
There's nothing new to report.
Hey, in talking about the defensive line and watching Tommy Kelly last night, saw something that I certainly don't think I'd seen ever before, that I'd ever noticed before, is him lining up a couple of yards off the ball in a three-point stance, but maybe 2 yards back, and then sort of shooting forward once the ball was snapped. Can you explain from a coach's perspective what the advantage would be there, why that's something that you would include into a game plan?
Well, it's similar to when a linebacker blitzes, I guess.
So is that something that you guys put in because of Atlanta? Is it something that fits with his skill set? Where does something like that come from? Does he do it on his own?
A combination of those things. Sometimes a little space can, clear things up as to if the line's going to slide, how the protection's going to go and all that, rather than being right on top of it and getting off on the ball and trying to, get onto the offensive lineman in a hurry, which there's certainly some advantages to that. A linebacker that blitzes from off the line, let's say 4 yards off the line as an example, has the opportunity to see things develop a little bit in front of them. Sometimes it's the guy in front of them that's blocking them. Sometimes it's one of the guys on the side. So sometimes there's a space that opens up in there that doesn't appear to be there when the ball is snapped. It happens after the linemen take their sets and they start to react and so forth. So there's advantages to both.
If you and Coach Smith wanted to have a joint seminar on how to manage a fourth quarter, you could have. I mean, there was plenty of material for both of you last night. I mean, a lot of action, especially in the last 5 to 6 minutes, a lot of things, a lot of decisions. First, I want to ask you, and this happened in the fourth quarter, what's your thought when you hear that the replay system is not working? What goes through your mind there when you have a review and you come back and say, Our equipment doesn't work.
In that situation, then you're just playing without replay, which is the way we played for years and years. So that's what it is.
But then they
the fact that we, have however many zillions of dollars committed to this system and it doesn't work, that's a whole other discussion. But
right.
The fact of the matter is there's nothing. Look, I couldn't fix it, so that's not what it's about. That's the way it is. If it's down, it's down.
But they had a review later. They had a review later in the game. That's right.
Fixed.
Did they get fixed at some point? Because they were able to review the third down spot later in the game.
Yeah, well, evidently.
Well, Arthur Blank is affiliated with Home Depot, so maybe they went down to Home Depot and hooked up the replay system.
That's a question, really, that should be asked to the league office and the officials, because I really don't. Mm-hmm. I don't have a good answer for it.
No, it's unbelievable. As you said, I was saying it earlier, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and you have to hear that the system doesn't work. I think we all would have been better off not knowing. You don't have to tell us that the system is not working. Like, why do we need to know that?
The only reason that we need to know it is because then you can't challenge. As a coach, you can't.
Right.
You couldn't challenge after that, because I would have challenged the play that they called an incomplete pass on, where Ryan scrambled out to his left, our right, and threw the ball. And I thought he threw it off his knee. I thought he was down when he threw the ball. And I was ready to throw the flag. And he said, look, the system's still down. You can't, you're just going to have to pick it up and we're going to go on, because that, you can't challenge it.
But it was fixed again a minute later.
And
Because under 2 minutes, when it was a booth review, they were able to look at the third down call, and I still think they got it wrong, but they were able to do it at least.
Yeah. Well, once it's under 2 minutes or in overtime, then it's totally out of our control. They don't even really talk to us about it. It's just, it's their decision when to review it and what to review and so forth. But up until that time, obviously the coaches have to be part of the process. And as I said, in that case, we would have had another challenge even if the other one had gone against us. I probably would have challenged the that Ryan, I thought he was down when he threw the ball that they called an incomplete pass.
How do you weigh going for it on fourth down, just after the 2 minute warning, versus, all right, do we punt it here and try to pin him? What are some of the decisions that are going through your mind at that stage of the game?
Yeah, well, that's one of those that could have gone, several different ways. You could try a long field goal. If you make the field goal, it's a two-score game. If you miss the field goal, then they would have had the ball in the, call it the 45, 46-yard line. If you make the first down, then essentially the game's over. So if you pick up a couple inches or however, whatever, 6 inches, whatever we needed, then the game's over. If you punt it, then you gain a few yards of field position, call it, say you get them on the 10, that halfway between the 20 and the goal line, call it the 10. So you gain some field position, but they still have, I would say, enough time, offense like that, they have enough time to, operate. So if you pick up the first down, then they don't get that possession, and essentially the game would be over. So we were trying to end it with a play that would gain 6 inches, and obviously, we weren't able to do that.
What does Akeem Talib meant for your team so far this year?
Well, Akeem's done a good job for us. He's done a real good job for us. Every day, he's been really consistent, very dependable, reliable guy. Through the off-season program, he's one of our award winners. Had a real good training camp. Is ready to go every day. Competes hard every day. Whatever it is, whether it's tackling, run force, coverage, doesn't matter. He's special teams. He's ready to go, and he competes well. His consistency, his dependability, and his performance have all been excellent.
Does his ability to match up with a really good wide receiver, a top wide receiver from the other team, allow you to do more creative things with the rest of your defense?
Sure. He definitely creates some flexibility with his skill set. No question.
So we want to creep into your literary mind for a second. Can you give us an idea, just an example of a couple of things? I see you writing constantly during the game. which I'm a fan of. But, you know, can you give us an idea of some of the things that you're writing during the game?
Just notes, you know, notes, things that came up, you know, that I want to make sure to cover with the team, or, you know, things that, that we're anticipating, and then just verifying, is this happening the way we thought it is, or is, you know, isn't it, and, you know, to check different tips and, you know, see, either confirm them or say, well, this isn't really going to be that big part of the game or game plan today. This is, you know, something that we have, but it doesn't look like it's going to be very applicable, that, those type of things.
So sometimes you'll write it down and say, you know, maybe, you know, check this on film, and it's, is it, sometimes is it completely different?
No, it's things going into the game that I've already, you know, checked, and like, here are some notes, here are some things that are keys or tips or things that, you know, that we're game planning for, and then are they actually occurring, or is something else occurring, and this not really, you know, empty formation is, you know, here we are in the second quarter. Are we getting empty today? Well, if we're not getting empty, then some of the ideas that we talked about here for empty are, you know, not really applicable. If we're getting, you know, a bunch of empty formation, then, you know, here's the things that we want to look for, and, you know, just to make sure you don't forget them or make a note of them, that, you know, something that you saw that you want to talk about at halftime, or you want to talk about, you know, when the series ends, you know, because you can't talk about it while you're out there doing it. So, you know, you just make a note to check on at the end of the series.
You guys have had enormous productivity over the last few years from the slot receiver position, and continuing this year. The numbers for Julian Edelman leading the league right now in receptions as of today. We were talking to Ron Jaworski on Friday, and Jaws, you know, studies a lot of tape, played quarterback in the league. He had an interesting comment about that position. I was hoping to play it for you here. And let's play Coach. This was Ron Jaworski on Friday talking about the importance of that position.
The most valuable player on a football team outside of the quarterback is that slot receiver. You know, teams are now spreading the field. 3, 4, and 5 wide receiver looks. That's the matchup you like to get, where you get these guys matched up on linebackers, get them on safeties versus that cover two. Because the predominant coverage I now see every week in the NFL is that cover two and the cover two man.
When you're looking for a slot receiver, when you're developing the plan for that position, do you agree with Jaws? Is it that important? How much time do you spend thinking about it? What are you looking for?
Well, I think each position on the football team, for us on our team, you know, has a definite job description. You know, there's a certain set of skills, a certain set of attributes that we would want to find in every single player with the position they play, and also, you know, as it relates to our entire roster. So our sixth offensive lineman, our seventh offensive lineman, our third tackle, our fourth inside guy, our eighth offensive lineman, our ninth offensive lineman, our tenth offensive lineman. I mean, there are certain things. If you're going to say, okay, well, this guy could be our eighth lineman, well, what does that mean? You know, what can he do? What's the definition of an eighth lineman,
right,
for the New England Patriots? So we have each thing spelled out, so that when we categorize a guy and say, well, he's, you know, he would be our eighth lineman, not our seventh, and here's why: because he doesn't have this skill as a seventh lineman, but he fits into the eighth, or vice versa.
So, what are you looking for?
Whatever
from a slot
happens
receiver
to be.
So, what is a slot receiver? When you're defining that for your team, what are you looking for?
Well,
from
and it's
a slot
lot
receiver?
Longer conversation than we would have now, but, you know, certainly it's the ability to create separation on the inside part of the field, get open and catch the ball. I mean, that's what he has to do. I think if you look at most teams in the league, you'll find that, you know, the top producers at the receiver position come from the X receiver and the weak side receiver and the slot receiver. So if they roll coverages to the weak side, then the strong side, the inside receiver, the slot receiver will probably get more balls than the outside guy. If they roll coverages to the strong side, then you're coming back to your weak side guy. And so that's one way or the other. Those are your, you know, those are going to be your two guys, however you slice it up. Now, I don't know if that's 100%, but I'd say, by and large, in football, that's, you know, you put your best receiver either in the slot or at X, and you put your second best receiver either in the slot or at X, assuming that their skill set is, you know, is carries over to what you want them to do.
I wanted to ask you about Tony Gonzalez before we get to the coach's question. I think you faced him for the last time, and he said he was going to retire last year, and unless something this miraculous happens. Can you put him into perspective? Does he remind you of anybody? If you have to describe Tony Gonzalez, how would you do it?
Well, he's a big receiver.
Not a tight end, really.
No, not really. He's a big receiver. He's got great size. He uses his body well to get position on defenders, like a basketball player would to rebound. And he's great hand-eye coordination, concentration on the ball, and receiving skills, period. So, you know, he operates from the middle of the field where he has a lot of different options on which way to go. And, you know, you have to defend everything with him, and kind of no matter where you are, there's a space on the other side of you where he can catch the ball because he's got a long reach, good hands, and, you know, big catch radius, and so he's a hard guy to cover.
All right, Bill, time now for the coach's question of the week. It's brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. See them for the limited-time Mercedes-Benz certified pre-owned event on the web at mbusa.com. This week's question comes from Tom in Middletown, Connecticut, maybe a recent college grad from your alma mater.
Hey,
perhaps.
There you go.
Tom,
they
wants,
listen to the show down there. Right?
Oh, yeah,
awesome.
All over New England.
We're huge at Wesleyan.
Yeah, we are. Tom wants to know if you ever had doubts during your coaching career that you would make it, and if you did, how'd you get through that time?
Well, I think for me, my coaching career has always been pretty short term. Just thinking about the year that I'm in, the week that I'm in, the game that I'm in, not trying to, you know, look ahead down the road to whatever it is, 5 years, 10 years, anything like that. Just try to, you know, be in the moment, because that's the only thing you can really control. And I think that's what your team needs from you is, you know, your best performance for that game, that week, that season. So I've always felt that I, you know, could do the job that I was trying to do that year or that week or that time. And then after that's over, then you move on to the next one. So that's the way I've looked at it. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that's kind of the way I see it, is just to stay in the moment and do what your team needs for you to do now, and let the things long term, they'll take care of themselves.
Tom,
as opportunities come, they come. If they don't, you know, I didn't get in coaching to, you know, to be the head coach of the New England Patriots. I got into coaching because I enjoyed coaching. I enjoyed the teamwork, the sport, the challenge of working with players and competing at a high level against another group of players and coaches. That's what drove me, not, you know, some big goal, you know, something at the end of the rainbow. That wasn't it at all. But, you know, it worked out. I have a great job. I have a great situation. But that isn't why it started.
Tom sounds like a young music major doubting his future. Come on,
you,
man.
You think my band's going to make it, yes,
right,
or no?
You'll be in the symphony one day. Stick with it, Tom.
Coach,
all right,
we certainly appreciate it. I'm sure you're tired after a long night. We'll talk to you again on Monday.
All right, sounds good.
All right, there you go. Bill Belichick joining us every Monday. Most important thing you heard him say, we'll reveal that next. Salkaholic, WEEI.